Welcome to Christ Church Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com. My home is not on this
earth, not in this world. Good morning. I know most of you know me. There's a few faces that I don't know very well. My name's Claire. My job this morning is to take us through the next part of the book of Mark. We've been going through the book of Mark, looking at it together for the last few months. We're in chapter 11 now, at a bit of a pivot point in the book of Mark. So that's what we're going to be looking at this morning. Have you ever seen something and thought to yourself, "Oh, that's great, that looks perfect, that is exactly what I need," but then when you actually get your hands on it, you realise it's not quite what you thought it was going to be? Last summer I went to Levenshulme Market with some friends, and I saw the pancake stall, and I got really quite excited about the pancake stall. The pancakes looked fantastic. They were covered in chocolate and fresh strawberries, just like the ones on the board. People were walking past me, and this smell of pancakes was amazing. Now, I was following the Slimming World eating plan at the time. Other eating plans are available. And this meant that if I was going to eat something that was high calorie, it had to be something that was really going to be worth it. And I was looking at those pancakes and I was thinking, right, this is really going to be worth it. They are definitely worth the calories there. So myself and Hannah Parrott went along to the stall. We bought ourselves a pancake each with all the trimmings. They were not very cheap either, I just would add. And do you know what? It was the most disappointing pancake I have ever had. Frankly, I could have made a better pancake at home. We should have just gone home and made our own. I was left wishing that I hadn't bothered, and it was really quite annoying. And this kind of thing is easy. It's really easy to do, isn't it, now that we buy stuff on the internet? We've all done it. You see something on the internet, you think, "Oh, that looks really good," and you order it. It arrives at home. You open it up. It's not quite what you were expecting. There's going to be some pictures on the next screen of people who ordered something and what arrived was not quite what they ordered. I mean, that first one, that doesn't look a thing like the thing he ordered. And yeah, so these guys were a little bit disappointed. And it seems, at least on face value, that's where we start off with this passage that we're looking at today. We start off with Jesus being a little bit disappointed with what he found as opposed to what he was expecting. It's a bit of a nasty picture, let's change it. Okay, so let's read the passage together. It will appear, it is there on the screen if you don't have your Bible. Mark 11, verses 12 to 25. On the following day, when they came from Bethany, he was hungry, that's Jesus, was hungry. And seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, he went to see if he could find anything on it. When he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs. And he said to it, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And his disciples heard it. And they came to Jerusalem, and he entered the temple and began to drive out those who sold and those who bought in the temple. And he overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold pigeons. And he would not allow anyone to carry anything through the temple. And he was teaching them and saying to them, "Is it not written, 'My house shall be called a house of prayer for all the nations'? But you've made it a den of robbers." And the chief priests and the scribes heard him and were seeking a way to destroy him, for they feared him, because all the crowd was astonished at his teaching. And when evening came, they went out of the city. As they passed by in the morning, they saw the fig tree withered away to its roots. And Peter remembered and said to him, "Rabbi, look, the fig tree that you cursed has withered." And Jesus answered him, Have faith in God. Truly I say to you, whoever says to this mountain, be taken up and thrown into the sea, and does not doubt in his heart, but believes that what he says will come to pass, it will be done for him. Therefore I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours. And whenever you stand praying, forgive if you have anything against anyone, so that your Father also, who is in heaven, may forgive you your trespasses. When Tim gave me this passage, you might be able to imagine my response. This is a really weird story. This is a really weird story. Let's be honest about it. It's quite odd in places. Here's Jesus, and we've seen Jesus through the book of Mark. We have seen him do some phenomenal things. We've seen him healing the sick. We've seen him raising the dead. We've seen him calming storms, feeding crowds. He's shown himself to be compassionate, to be loving, to be powerful. He's just entered Jerusalem. Phil talked to us a couple of weeks ago about this. He's just entered Jerusalem and he's welcomed as a king. And people are actually beginning to wonder, is this the promised Messiah? Is this the anointed one? And then here we've got these two events that, again, at face value, they just seem to fly in the face of all of that. He curses a fig tree for not bearing fruit, even though it's not the season for figs. And then he goes into the temple and he's driving out people and he's overturning tables and chairs. And it just seems a little bit out of character, doesn't it? And then at the end, we've got this really difficult section about prayer and faith. And I'll be honest with you, I saw this passage that Tim had given me and I was like, well, thanks for that, Tim. Great. So if you, like me, you've read this passage and you've kind of thought, oh, that's a bit odd, and moved on quite quickly to the next bit, which is what I always did when I read this. I'm hoping that today we might be able to get a little bit of a grip on what's actually going on here and what it means for us today, what it meant for the people at the time and what it means for us today. Because on the surface, this story seems like that it's a little bit all over the place. There's lots of different things going on. And Jesus' explanation at the end, where he talks about faith and prayer, it doesn't really actually seem to answer the question. It doesn't seem to have anything to do with what's gone before. I'll be very honest with you. I was quite relieved when I opened up a commentary and it said, the cursing of the fig tree is one of the most difficult stories in the Gospels. Phew. It's not just me who thinks this then. So what is this passage actually about? What relevance has it got to you and to me? Well, this passage, actually, it's a passage that shows us a little bit more about who Jesus is, about what he came to do, and about what our response to that should be. You see, the nation of Israel, the people of God, they had big promises over them going all the way back to Abraham. God had promised Abraham that he would be a father of many and that through him all the nations on the earth would be blessed. And that's what this passage is about. It's about Jesus being the way that those promises to Abraham are fulfilled. This passage is about how we, as Gentiles, unable to keep God's law, how we are now able to be brought into the promises and to have a relationship with God. It's about how we can demonstrate faith and pray in confidence to our God. Now, I can hear the brains ticking around the room going, Claire, how do you get to that conclusion? Well, let's have a closer look at the passage and let's really start to understand what's going on here. I'm going to break it into three fairly obvious sections: the fig tree, the temple, and the response, faith. So, the fig tree. Let's look at the fig tree section. It helps to know that the fig tree is a metaphor or a picture that is used in the Old Testament for the nation of Israel. Many of those people around Jesus at the time, they would have understood that. They would have known, fig tree, oh, you're talking about us. You're talking about Israel here. And the religious leaders would definitely have made that connection. They would make that link. They would have understood that. In Hosea chapter 9 in the Old Testament, we see God says, "Like grapes in the wilderness I found Israel, like the first fruits on the fig tree in its first season I saw your fathers." And then the nation of Israel consecrated themselves to Baal, and later on it says, "Ephraim is stricken, their root is dried up, they shall bear no fruit." So there's a link here. In Micah and in Jeremiah in the Old Testament, we see Israel being referred to as a fig tree. So there's this definite link there. We're talking about Israel. It's a picture. And Jesus' disappointment with the lack of fruit on the fig tree is a picture of his disappointment with the lack of spiritual fruitfulness that he sees in the nation of Israel, and specifically in the religious leaders who should have been fruitful. Let's have a little bit of a gardening lesson. I'm looking for Adrian. He's disappeared. He's our resident gardener. Does anybody else know anything about fig trees? Fig trees. I didn't know anything about... Mike knows about fig trees. Okay, I actually didn't think that I liked figs. I thought I didn't like figs. And then we went to Turkey and stayed with some friends who gave me fresh figs for breakfast with honey and yogurt. I really like figs. I have discovered that I really like fresh figs. We actually had a fig tree in the garden of a house when we lived in Zimbabwe. We had a fig tree in the garden. But because I didn't think I liked figs, and I didn't know anything about fig trees, to my shame, I completely ignored the fig tree, and the figs dropped off and rotted or got eaten by random wildlife. If I'd taken a little bit more notice of that fig tree, I might have understood this passage a little bit better. You see, fig trees blossom before they come into leaf. So if you find a fig tree with leaves on, like the one in the story, you may well expect to find that it does have fruit. Another thing about fig trees is that in the spring, fig trees produce something called breba or taksh. Now, I might be pronouncing that completely wrong, but they are figs that grow on last year's shoot growth. Okay, they're an early crop before the main crop grows on this year's shoot growth. Does that make sense? Making sense. They can be an indicator of what the main crop will be like. They're kind of the first fruits or the first crops from the fig tree. So when Jesus sees a tree that looks really healthy, it's got lots of leaves, it's the springtime, he's probably expecting to find this breba, this early crop. So the fig tree is a picture of Israel. It's a picture, more pointedly, of the Jewish religious leaders at the time. From a distance, you would look at it and you would think, it looks great, it looks like it should be bearing fruit. But the reality is, however, that what Jesus saw was a lot of outward religious show that looked good, but no real substance, no fruit. Nothing that's going to fulfill those promises of being a blessing to all the nations of the earth. In fact, when we read through the Gospels, we see Jesus being very critical of the scribes and the Pharisees for their empty religion. He points out that they look clean on the outside, but inside they're dirty. Now, we've got an advantage here because we know what comes next for Jesus. We know that his death and resurrection, that is the thing that actually fulfills those prophecies from the promises in the Old Testament. We know this. And Jesus is looking on the fig tree for fruit, for the early first fruits. But the reality is that it's Jesus who brings the fruit. He is the one who brings the blessing to all the nations. He's the one who opens up the promises of God to you and to me. We're the fruit that follows. So that's the fig tree. Look at the temple. The next section in the story is when Jesus goes into the temple. I like the pictures on the screen here. Look how calm Jesus looks turning over that table. I think it's probably more likely to have been like that picture. There's a bit more emotion in that one. Just like the first section about the fig tree, we need to get a little bit more of an understanding of this section too. It helps to have some background. A common tool, method, or device for storytelling at this time was to wrap one story around another story. And we've actually seen Mark do this a few times as we've read through Mark. And here, he's wrapping this story of the fig tree around this episode in the temple. When people use this device, this method of storytelling, it's used to show that these stories are linked, that they're about the same thing, that there's a similar theme here. And it's this that makes it much more clear that the theme of all of this is this promise of being a blessing to the nations. And here's why. When Jesus comes into the outer courtyard of the temple, he finds people buying, selling the animals for sacrifices. He finds them exchanging money, and he's furious about this. The temple had a very specific design. If you want a really, really good description of the design of the temple, have a listen on the CCM website to a talk by Sam Davies a few weeks ago at the Lady Barn site on the tabernacle. He describes this excellently. It's a really good, help you get a really good understanding of it. For now, it's enough to know that this part of the temple where Jesus is, where this is happening, this is the only part of the temple where Gentiles, non-Jews, where the nations were able to come and worship God. This was the place where the nations could be brought into the blessings of God. And look what they're doing to it. They're treating it like it doesn't matter. They're turning it into the place where the Jews could buy and sell their sacrifices, foreigners could exchange money at a price. And then Jesus comes in and he says, "Is it not written, 'My house shall be a house of prayer for all nations,' but you have made it a den of robbers?" Because Jesus himself is the fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy. He is the way that the Gentiles, the nations, you and me, are brought into the promises and the blessings of God. His death and resurrection are what makes the way for us to be able to come today before God, before the Creator of all things, to worship him, to know that we are loved, we are accepted children, and that we're part of the story. We are the children promised to Abraham. Jesus fulfills that promise. And here we see him pointing to that as he angrily clears out the temple. He's saying, "It is not meant to be like this. You are meant to be fruitful, to be a blessing to all nations, to be a way for all to come to God. And I am going to make that happen." And through his death and resurrection, that is exactly what Jesus did. He brought us into the promise, and he brought us into everything, everything that promise means. We are sons and heirs with Christ, and we are being made to be like him. We get to have relationship with God like him. We are his beloved children like him. We get to carry the authority of God like him. We get to be the continuation of the promises and the Old Testament prophecies. We are now the ones who are to be a blessing to all nations of the earth. We get to share the gospel. We get to share the good news with others. And we get to do it as the children of an all-powerful, sovereign God who can and does answer prayer and perform miracles. The very final thing that we see in that section in the temple is we see the response of the religious leaders. Now, we know that they have been opposed to Jesus. We've seen that already through the book of Mark. But here we see them determining in their hearts to find a way to destroy him, to find a way to kill him. This is a pivot point in the book of Mark. Because from this point onwards, we're heading in one direction and one direction only. We are heading for the cross. We're heading now for the events that will finally fulfill all of those promises. We're heading for the events that change everything for us who believe and who follow Jesus. So the response then. The final section of our passage is the bit that comes after the temple. It's the completion of the fig tree story. If you like it, it's the bit that's wrapped around the other end of that temple episode. Jesus and the disciples, they pass by the fig tree again on their way back into Jerusalem the next morning, and the disciples notice that it's withered. They seem surprised and they point it out to Jesus. Hey, look, that fig tree, you know, the one you cursed, well, it's withered. And again, this is another really tricky section, It's another tricky section because at face value, it looks like Jesus' response, his explanation, doesn't really link to what's happened. And on top of that, it can be read as though if you've got enough faith, you can physically command a mountain to move. Anything you pray for will happen. But that doesn't fit with what the rest of the Bible says. So what is Jesus actually saying in this section? What's he actually saying? Jesus starts by saying, have faith in God. Now, I am not a Greek scholar, but I've done my reading the last couple of weeks. The Greek for this is really interesting because it can also be translated not just as have faith in God, but have a strong faith, have a mighty faith, have an excellent faith. Jesus is calling for faith as a response to who he is. What we have here is Mark again highlighting the need to be committed to a risky kind of faith, a faith that's costly, a faith that causes us to step out of the boat like we saw Peter doing a few weeks ago. The idea of moving mountains into the sea was a commonly used picture for overcoming difficulties. So again, we can see the use of picture and metaphor here, and Jesus is using, this picture is just outside Jerusalem, Jesus is using something he can see, tell this mountain. And he's using a picture of something to explain what he's saying. And he follows with a natural progression, talking about faith to talking about prayer. And that's actually a very natural progression because prayer is the most obvious demonstration of faith. Praying would be an absolute categorical waste of time if we didn't have faith in the one to whom we prayed. Asking God for things, worshipping him, they're demonstrations of our dependence on him and our trust in his sovereignty. Now, personally, I'm convinced that God can move a physical mountain into the sea as we pray. But it isn't exactly practical. I can't see very many situations where there would be a need for physically moving a mountain into the sea. And if we all start commanding geographical features to move around, I think we would cause a little bit of chaos. So if we read this as the metaphor and the picture that it's designed to be, understanding that it's about having faith for God to move the mountains in our lives, it makes a lot more sense here. But actually, there is more to it than that. Because Jesus is talking to the disciples here. He's talking to the apostles here. He's talking to those who he has been and he will be sending out to spread the good news. He's calling them to have a bigger picture of who God is and what God can do. And also, what they can do because of who they now are and the authority that they carry. These are the guys that he's been sending out to heal the sick, to cast out demons, just like he does. So they're surprised that the fig tree's withered, and Jesus brushes it off. Yeah, have faith. Of course, because there's power in my words. And there's power in your words too. You can pray for stuff and see it happen just like that. It's almost as if he's like, why are you surprised? And because, as we've already seen, because Jesus fulfills Old Testament prophecy, because he brings us into the picture and he makes us the children of God, that means that he's also speaking to us here. We are now the ones that he sends out to make disciples of all nations. We're the ones who represent him on the earth, who are to be a blessing to all nations, and we are the ones who carry his authority. In his commentary on this passage, Joseph Benson wrote, "The evident meaning of this precept, as given to the apostles, was, have a firm faith or confidence in the power and faithfulness of God to enable you to effect what you believe to be for his glory and the furtherance of the work in which you are engaged." I'm going to read that again. Have a firm faith or confidence in the power and the faithfulness of God to enable you to effect what you believe will be for his glory and the furtherance of the work in which you are engaged. And that's the call for us today. In the light of the fact that Jesus has fulfilled everything necessary to bring us back into relationship with God, we're called to have a faith in him that is big and a faith in him that is bold. How big is your picture of God? How robust is your faith that God will act when you pray? What does it actually look like in everyday life to have that kind of faith? Because it doesn't just look like asking God for a Lamborghini and getting one on the drive the next morning. It doesn't even just look like asking for England to win the Rugby World Cup. What might demonstrating that kind of faith actually look like? Well, sometimes it looks like praying for the sick and seeing them healed. Sometimes it looks like praying for provision and receiving it. And we have stories of both of those things across the CCM family. Sometimes it looks like praying for someone who is bound up in their circumstances, their thoughts or their emotions, and seeing Jesus bring freedom. Sometimes it looks like that. Sometimes it looks a little bit different to that. A number of years ago, when my kids were small and still in infant school, I made friends with a mum on the playground. She was a single mum. She was a lovely lady, but she was quite isolated. And she had some really significant struggles going on in her life. I got to know her, I became friends with her, and I was always very intentional about being open about my faith and what I believed, so I talked to her about those things. One day, when she dropped her son off at school, I could see that she was really struggling. Something wasn't right. She was not very well at all. It actually turned out that she had proper flu, not a cold, proper flu, and she was really quite ill. So very practically, I offered to pick her son up from school for her so she didn't have to get out of bed again the rest of the day. And then I had that nagging feeling that I know is God speaking to me, pray for her to be healed. So I very simply said to her, look, you know that I believe in Jesus. You know that I believe that he really cares about you. I also believe that he can physically heal you and make you better. Would it be okay if I just pray before you go home now and just ask God to make you better? And she said yes. So I put my hand on his shoulder, prayed a very simple prayer, asking God to make her better and telling the sickness to leave her body. It was bold faith. I knew God could do it, and I stepped out. And you know what? She didn't get well for over a week. The flu ran its natural course in her life. But you know what else? That woman met Jesus in that moment. She met Jesus. And when she was well, she asked me to take her to church. She did an Alpha course. She began to follow Jesus. She was baptized and her life was changed forever. Did God give me the thing that I asked for? No, I wanted to see her healed immediately in that moment. But I've got a big picture of who God is. And I've got enough confidence to step out and pray for those things, believing that he is sovereign and he is perfect in all of his ways. His answers are not always what I expect, but he moves mountains. Recently, I've watched from a distance as the family who were amongst our closest friends when we lived overseas, they have lived out this kind of bold faith. For the last 20 months or so, they've been dealing with their daughter having cancer. She was 18 years old when she was diagnosed. They've done everything that they could to support her, to help her, and they have prayed for her healing with absolute confidence and faith in the God who heals. They've lived this out publicly. They've shared in person with many hundreds of people. They've shared via social media with many thousands of people. They've shared the highs and the lows with honesty, with grace, with dignity, and above all, with bold faith in the God who heals. They've also carried on their lives. They've running an operation that feeds orphans in the city they live in. When Cyclone Idai hit, they prayed, got people together and drove two HGVs full of food, mattresses, blankets and clothing across to the Mozambique border. All of this whilst this was going on. They've lived it out. Bold faith. Victoria passed away on bonfire night. Did they receive the thing that they asked for? Well, I know that they would have preferred to see her healed in this life. But the mountain moved. And they have a very big picture of God. They've been used by God and they will continue to be used by God in the process. They have a big picture of who God is. They're confident to ask him for those big things, believing that they will receive them. They know with all their hearts, just as I watched them sing at her funeral, with beaming smiles on their faces, that he is perfect in all of his ways. Victoria, she ran her race and she is home with her Saviour Jesus. And I believe that the nations are being blessed by that family's bold faith. Sometimes that's more what having bold faith in God looks like. Praying, believing in our hearts that we've received, and knowing at the same time that he is sovereign, that his way of answering, his way of moving mountains might not be the way that we want or expect it to be. So at this pivotal point in the book of Mark, Jesus is again shown as fulfillment of Old Testament promises and prophecy. He is the one who enables all the nations on earth to be brought into the promises of God. Jesus' death and resurrection brings us into a new identity as the children of God and as heirs to all of those promises. His death and resurrection enable us to live lives of bold faith, radical faith in God, to come before God in prayer believing that he will act. And that's the challenge that remains for us this morning. How big is your view of God? What areas in your life do you need him to move mountains? Let's be the ones who take steps of faith. Let's have expectation that God will answer.